You were listening to Fun in D by Watson and Company from their album Tears of Joy. Now, the first time I saw them perform, well, Watson perform on his violin, it was in the square in Boulder, Colorado, and he was barefoot, wearing a white tuxedo. He loved what he did. His music was exquisite. He found joy and laughter in what he was doing, and he brought that out in the crowd. We're going to have a guest tonight, I hope. We're trying to get him on the line now. He's a specialist in laughter. His name is Dr. Paul McGee. You know, I keep thinking he ought to change his name to McGlee with all of the research that he's done about laughter. He studied laughter and its healing effects, and he's going to be with us in just a bit. I'm Sherry Edwards, your host for Sound Health on BBS Radio for the next hour, and I'm delighted that you could join us for a bit of conversation designed to provide options and information for self-health. We're going to be taking phone calls this evening. The toll-free number, 877-876-5227, and our toll-free number in Canada, 888-810-8322. There is a direct line, 530-876-3222. There are a lot of new numbers posted on BBS, their website, bbsradio.com. There's a Skype line. There's alternate lines. There's too many to read. Jump on bbsradio.com and look at that. We're going to be monitoring sound health at soundhealth.org. For those of you who use your phone line to dial up and listen to BBS, so you can use your computer at the same time to send us a message. That's been working well. Or you can send us a message at radio@vocalprofiling.com. I have three announcements before our guest gets here. One is that I've posted an idea for a new column on BBS Radio. It's about the frequencies that influence our lives. Today's frequencies deals with the note of B and the desire of the soul to support the needs of humanity. I've written several paragraphs about today and how those frequencies might influence your life. I'd appreciate it if you would go to the section Question the Experts on BBS Radio. It's on the left side of the opening page, and then it's on the second section of information there on the left in the columns. And let me know what you think and if you'd like to see more of that. We're trying to put together a section of looking at your soul notes. Now, everybody has a signature sound, and we can look at that through your voice by the frequencies. We take about a 40-second sample of your voice and look at what's going on, and we can look at genomes and toxins and pathogens. But there's also a soul note that is an influence in combination with who you are, but also with the Earth's frequencies and the frequencies that are bombarding the Earth. Bombarding is not a good word for that. That are coming toward the Earth from all the planets. And there's been studies done about those frequencies. They're very cyclical. They are 24 hours in a cycle, a moon cycle, and a sun cycle, and they repeat themselves year after year. So they know something is going on with it. So let us know if you'd like to see more. That'd be kind of like an astrology reading, but it's based on frequencies. So we might call it bioacoustically speaking or keynote of the day. We don't really know what to call it. We'd welcome your suggestions. Don, the producer of the show, and Michelle too, but I talked to Don last week, And he told me there are ways for us to go online as a group, hundreds of us at a time, and we could do vocal prints online because we can do them right over the internet. And you could watch these being done, and it's almost an instantaneous printout of who you are based on the frequencies of your voice. In this month's Oprah magazine, there was an article about who are you really? And how to peel away all the things that are not authentic, the things that are not you, and get to the core of who you are. And we can do that with our new computer program called Invoice. And you can call us up. We jack your telephone right in. Are you on the line?
I'm here.
Oh, Dr. McGee. Just a moment. I have a few announcements to get through, and then we'll bring you on.
Okay, great.
Okay, I think I'm on the second announcement. We got one more to go. So this computer program that we can have you speak to us right online, we'll get together on the forum that Don has put together. Dr. McGee, I'm getting feedback from the line someplace. Michelle, is that you, or is it coming from the radio? I'm going to start to stutter here in a minute about this. So if you would like to join us, let us know. Call us at, or email us at radio@vocalprofiling.com. The third one, the third announcement, is that we've posted some videos for you at your request. One of them is the reversal of attention deficit disorder. There's two of those posted. The regrowth of nerve tissues for an MS client, and also for a client that had peripheral neuropathy. We saw them at clinic. We took their vocal prints. We gave them the frequencies back that their vocal print indicated, and we filmed that. There's also a couple there on muscle trauma. I think there's a stroke victim that we helped be able to use his muscles again. And I think they have the motorcycle trauma victim there. So those are posted on one of the websites, Nutra Sounds, that's plural, N-U-T-R-A, sounds.com. It's on the front page and it's on the left. This says downloads. And you're welcome to make lots of copies of those videos and pass them around. And as always, Good Vibrations is there. That shows the technique. That's the one of the little girl that didn't have growth hormones kicking in, and we were able to help her do that. While you're there on the site, check out the free online classes. Our next one is March 15th. It's only an hour, so we usually take someone from the listen audience and invite them to have their own vocal profile done. Some of the comments we're getting back is about 90% accurate. One young boy I remember that came in with another class said, "Boy, if I had this vocal profile, it saved me 2 years of therapy." So it's good, it's accurate, it's fun, and that's what we want to do with people, along with allowing them to see who they really are, because you really can't hide from your voice. Okay, Dr. Paul McGee, you're on the line with us, and you have quite an extensive background in studying laughter and how that helps heal the body. And our audience here at BBS Radio is always looking for someone that can help them make their life better in an easy way.
Well, I know since to help people, it's a cruel and thankless task, but somebody's got to do this work.
To make people laugh, that's right. Good. How did you get into this idea of studying laughter and seeing that that was some kind of healing benefit?
Well, initially, before I got into the focus on health and wellness aspects of humor and laughter, actually, it came time to do a doctoral dissertation, and I started looking for a topic that was interesting to me that we didn't know much about, and I came across a couple of studies on humor, and so I did my PhD dissertation on that topic, and basically have been with it ever since. I spent 20 years as an academic person doing research on humor and laughter, and then for the last 15 years have been working full-time as a professional speaker in hospitals and corporations doing programs on humor and health and using humor to cope with job stress, life stress.
We're going to talk a lot about that in your books and how people can get in touch with you and your website after we give people an idea about laughter. Laughter is like crying and anger and frowning. It's an innate thing. People don't need, babies don't need to learn to be taught how to laugh.
It's built into us. You know, the laughter shows up pretty early in infancy, and it's interesting. Sometimes you mentioned the therapeutic benefits of crying. Even sometimes there's a laughter and crying effect which occurs. I don't know. Some of your listeners have probably had situations where they've been at the movies or at friends or at a party, and you're in a joyful, positive mood. You're laughing, and suddenly the laughter actually turns to emotional tears, crying. And it's really one of the mechanisms that the body uses to sort of let go of built-up tension and any difficult emotion you have where you haven't talked about it, you haven't worked it through. The body uses laughter as a vehicle for sort of letting go. And then after you have that kind of laugh, cry, sometimes people feel emotionally drained, but you feel better. There's a cathartic kind of cleansing and release that occurs.
I know in our work at Sound Health, particularly with people with high blood pressure, when we get the right frequency for them, they will just hysterically laugh, and it normalizes, well, after they get finished the laughing, but it normalizes their blood pressure.
Yeah, I mean, that's... In the case of the regular research, you know, we don't know actually a lot about blood pressure, but it looks like the picture that's emerging is that, of course, when the act of laughing is pretty physically demanding. So while you're laughing, actually blood pressure goes up. You know, muscles are working, your heart rate goes up. It's a pretty demanding kind of cardiac output. But when you stop laughing, what's not clear at this point is whether there is, like, and on a one-time effect, you know, so blood pressure going down below its baseline. But we do have evidence that for people, for example, even people who've had a heart attack, you know, for whom blood pressure actually is an issue, that people who've gone through as part of their standard cardiac rehab program, some people, while they were there, half of them randomly assigned watched a comedy video 3 times a week and part of their regular rehab program, and others just went through the regular rehab program. At the end of the year, you know, although blood pressure wasn't the main focus of the study, it was really cardiac health, but at the end of the year, although there were no differences in blood pressure at the beginning, the group that regularly watched comedy videos had significantly lower blood pressure. So it does look like if it's something you do habitually on an ongoing basis, there is a blood pressure lowering effect.
What's the biology of that? Do you know?
Well, we didn't know much about that until pretty recently, and it looks like what's going on. There's, you know, we've known is you have to sort of look at it at the level of, you know, of the artery and the lining of arteries. What's going on? We've known a long time, you know, in terms of nutritional impact, the impact of cholesterol, you know, on arteries and the buildup of plaque and how that sort of destroys the health, you know, of the artery. But there's, I mean, I'm sure you've talked about the broader field of psychoneuroimmunology and at some point in past programs, or P&I research, that's, you know, psycho meaning mind, neuro, central nervous system, immunology, focusing on the immune system. But it's an area of research that's been looking at mind-body relationships in very reductive ways for the last 25 years or so. And in the case of, you know, of humor, you know, there's one new piece of evidence that shows, so there's a lot of research now documenting that if you're chronically in a negative emotional state, you're someone who's always angry, you're always depressed, you're always getting tense and anxious, you know, what happens is that, you know, that stress experience winds up elevating blood pressure, and the more experience you have over time, you know, of that blood pressure going up, coming back down, in the midst of stress it going up, it looks like that in its own right, chronic negative emotion as a source of stress, winds up sort of breaking down the integrity of the arterial wall. And so what humor does, I mean, here's a nice, I mean, I don't want to get into specific studies with, you know, with your listeners, but this one's very nice to compare. If you take, there's, you know, everybody's familiar with the regular blood pressure cuff. If you take, there's a way of measuring the diameter of that artery, you know, it's called the brachial artery. If you measure the diameter of that wall and then you put on a regular blood pressure cuff for a period of time, so it blocks off the movement of blood flow through there. When you release it, then there's a surge of blood going through. And so what this study did was expose people to a very stressful video, and other people watched the comedy video. And the question is, well, what impact did that have on this particular artery's ability to handle that increased blood flow? What a healthy artery would do would be to expand, to dilate. And when people were exposed to stress, this is a one-time stress from watching a video, there was a 33% drop in the diameter of that artery, a constriction effect. So stress, you know, really causes the artery to constrict. And the comedy was a 22% on average, you know, across all the subjects in the study, increase in diameter. So there's something about humor that not only produces the personal experience of feeling more relaxed, but at the level of what's going on in arteries, it's a dilation, it's a measurable dilation of the artery. So that's an exciting finding. So I think that's certainly one of the mechanisms that's behind, you know, how humor and laughter wind up contributing to good cardiac health.
Has anyone done any studies on cortisol, since it is so intimately related with all the cardiovascular constriction,
right,
and blood pressure and anything like that? Does cortisol go up or down when people are laughing very hard?
It goes down. I mean, there's at least three studies. You know, last time I looked, there were three studies that documented that, you know, when you usually this is done by, you know, you measure cortisol levels, you know, before and after watching a comedy video. And sometimes subjects get to choose the video, sometimes they don't. But ideally they would choose it so it's something funny to them. But then, well, that creates other problems. But in any case, there's three studies documenting the fact that cortisol levels are reduced, you know, in comparison if you do a before and after watching comedy. And so that's exciting since, you know, we know that cortisol levels go up. It's one of the stress-related hormones. And
this would be a great diet.
Pardon?
This would be a great diet.
Absolutely. You know, and I should point out that, you know, laughter is not unique in this thing. And maybe you've talked about this with other guests, but other types of relaxation procedures also have been shown to be effective in lowering cortisol levels. So laughter is just, you know, one more that does that, and maybe it's because of this relaxation effect. You know, there was one study in the 1930s and more studies recently showing that, you know, one of the things, well, again, certain muscles are contracting, they're working when you laugh, but when you stop laughing, they relax. I mean, it's a general principle of exercise physiology. You work muscles and then you stop working them, they tend to relax. And you can feel that. I mean, I invite your listeners to, I mean, in my programs, I always do, you know, I have a routine which leads us up to this, but we wound up doing 30 or 40 seconds of nonstop belly laughter. Everybody in the room, even if it's, whether it's 30 people or 1,000 people. And afterwards, I'll ask people, well, now pay attention to your body. What do you notice that's different relative to before we did the laughter? And there's always, 95% of the time, there's someone who says, I just feel more relaxed. And if you look at people, you can see the relaxation. They look looser. They're sort of slumping in their chair.
Even if people start laughing artificially, sort of, it becomes real and then very contagious.
Absolutely. It's no coincidence that, you know, television does that, takes advantage of laugh tracks. And also, there's, you know, let me say this. I'm sure that some of your listeners are aware of these laughter clubs that have sprung up around the country.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over, and I'll give you a little bit of background for that. But in short, what these are, they're groups of people who get together usually at the beginning of the day, but not necessarily. But and they just laugh together, sort of like if you're in your 40s or 50s or older, you may remember the images we got when in the 1970s from China, people doing Tai Chi, going out in the morning and starting their day just doing these Tai Chi exercises. People in India started doing this a little over a decade ago. There was a physician, a Dr. Kataria, who wanted to bring some kind of therapeutic help to the masses and the poor masses in India. And he wound up developing these laughter exercises, and people get together morning and they just laugh. They started out with jokes, but they soon discovered that they were offending some people, and also they started running out of jokes soon, so they just get together and laugh. And there's not a lot of research on just this forced laughter thing, but it does seem to be the case that you get a lot of these same benefits, you know. So it doesn't matter why your body's doing this, you get your body going through the motions of real belly laughter, and you know, it's like it doesn't know the difference, and you get these wellness promoting benefits.
Have they? Is there any studies about why laughing is contagious?
Ah, boy.
It just is.
It just is. That's a hard one to answer in terms of the why. I suspect if you've got a psychologist, a sociologist, and a neurophysiologist together, they would give you three very different answers.
Well, we've done some studies on laughing and looking at it, and there's four things that seems to be consistent. Even if we start people laughing, you know, very artificially, their citric acid goes up, so that might be the immune connection.
Mm-hmm.
Also, their ammonia goes down. And I think because laughing involves the diaphragm and the heart, there's a heart rhythm nerve that kicks in. And also their potassium cell salts become more useful.
In what way does it become more useful? What do you mean by that?
Well, if they were low, they came up into a normal range and became more useful. So I don't know if that fits into anything that you've done.
No, I haven't seen anything like that. Have you got that written down somewhere? Or is that?
Oh, we have the data. I just haven't written it up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would like to see that at some point if you ever get that written up. The immune system, you mentioned the immune system. There's, you know, I guess as you're aware, there's a lot of evidence about a pretty broadly based immunoenhancement effect. There's, I don't know, it's roughly 35 to 38 studies, you know, different types of studies, but, you know, pointing toward a pretty broadly based immunoenhancement effect. There's one area that's really well established, and it's immunoglobulin A, IgA.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the reason most of the research is focused on that is it's cheaper. It's expensive to do immunoassays, and you can do salivary IgA, and it's much cheaper. And so there's very consistent evidence, you know, that there's increased concentrations of IgA, you know, which help protect you against upper respiratory problems like colds and flu. And that's, you can measure that in a one-hour time frame before and after increased concentrations. There's another part of your immune system called natural killer cells. Among other things, they seek out and destroy tumor cells, cancer cells. And there's at least, again, four studies that I know of now documenting an increased activity, increased number of natural killer cells, and also increased activity of natural killer cells in response to humor and laughter. So there's something about humor and laughter that turn the system on, getting it to do more effectively the kind of thing it's designed to do. So that's exciting.
Do you find, or have any of these studies found, that one kind of humor is better than another kind of humor?
There's no real research on that in terms of these health, in terms of any health-related measures. But that's something that's just, there's a couple of people in Canada who've developed a measure sort of distinguishing sort of the positive and negative side of humor. And So that hopefully will start to generate some of these kinds of data. But that's a sense of humor measure. So, but if in terms of actually exposing people to positive humor, you know, or negative humor, and looking, like we haven't talked about pain yet, but looking at pain measures or looking at immune system changes, nobody's done that. And I suspect the first thing that will be done will be to look at the relationship between these sort of positive sense of humor measures and negative sense of humor measures and their relationship to health data. So this is something that's new. No one's really looked at that yet.
What flips my laughter button is when people say things backwards, like the moods are weaving instead of the weeds are moving.
Yeah.
And one of the funniest ones that just doubled me over for a long time is my teeth are teetering. I mean, really meant the teeth are chattering.
I just doubled you Dover.
I was just hysterical with that. And there is a whole series of, like, fractured fairy tales.
Yeah.
That when you try to read them, you just can't get through them. It's like Cinderella dropped her slipper,
yes,
you know, kind
yeah,
of thing.
I remember seeing that one.
And well, the three petal legs.
Oh, yeah. Did you ever hear the one about Labor Rat Rotten Nut?
No! What is that one?
Good, it's a new one. Well, it's a furry starry. It's a furry starry, toiling warts welcher, alter girdle deferent from her once regional virgin. So it's a systematic, so it's a fairy, what did I just say? It's a fairy story told in words which are altogether different from the once original version.
Do you have a reference for those? Because I think people are going to want them after we talk about them.
No, I've never seen this written down. I remember it since I was in high school, and it was sort of passed around. I once had a copy. I don't have a copy anymore, but it's the concept is everything that I said there is a real word, like the mural to this furry starry. So the word mural replaces moral. They're all real words. So it's very tricky when you write them down because you get stuck up on the real words. It's easier when you go on the sound. The mural is, yonder nor sorghum stenches, shut ladle gulls, stopper torque wet strainers. Under no circumstances should little girls stop and talk with strangers. So in terms of the kind of humor, so this may be your kind of humor. And so my point of view is, the important thing, number one, is you raised up that it's not hostile humor. It's not humor that's degrading to other people. I hate to say this, but there's some basis for thinking, even if it's put down or critical humor, it may very well be that the person who's doing that, who really thinks it's funny, gets some of these health-promoting benefits we're talking about. But in the process, you know, there's a negative impact on other people. So, I mean, the research doesn't really help us sort that out, but it may very well be that humor that really is cruel and degrading to other people and embarrasses other people or makes them angry, for the person who does it, could still, you know, produce some of these positive effects. So that means it's only part of the
research. When people pick out movies, I mean, The Gods Must Be Crazy is an hysterical movie. I don't know if you've ever seen that about the Coke bottle.
I haven't seen it. I have a 4 and a 7-year-old now, and I stopped going to movies.
This is a really old one, but I've seen it so many times. It's about a pilot who drops a Coke bottle out in the Aboriginal country and how that Coke bottle got this whole tribe into trouble. And then one of them was to go send it off the edge of the world back into the ocean because it caused trouble. It's just hysterical, and I love watching it. I mean, it makes my ribs hurt.
Yeah.
But there's other things that are supposedly funny in movies today that I just find disgusting,
right,
embarrassing, and a total turnoff.
Well, and
I've walked out
of
a few.
A lot of popular humor has moved in that direction, but from a health perspective, I mean, the important thing is, you know, that for you to have something that works for you, you know, and to immerse yourself in that. And then there's the question of, I've heard people argue, it's actually funny in a way, you know, that's funny. No, that's not funny. Here's why that's not funny. And then they'll outline, but see, you're the world's best expert on what's funny to you. And
yeah, because, yeah, absolutely.
The people I worry about are the people who don't find anything, you know, to laugh at, to laugh with. And then I think they're missing out on, you know, on the fundamental health and wellness and coping mechanism.
Would you suggest if people can't find their own humor or what makes them laugh, that they watch these things with laugh tracks? Do they, that have just as much effect as a real laughter for them?
For some people that works. I think for a lot of people it doesn't. You're very aware of the artificial nature of it. I think the important thing is to sort of get your antenna out and start systematically looking around, exploring for what does work for you. Most people who are not suffering from what I call terminal seriousness, you know, do have, what's important to know about, I call it TS, you know, because it sneaks up on you. And in my, the reason I can earn a living, you know, doing programs on humor and health and humor and coping is basically because the country is becoming, in some ways, more and more serious because people are more stressed out. In hospitals, nurses are terribly stressed. They're overloaded with work. And people in corporations are stressed out. People who aren't in either of those settings have, you know, they have health-related issues. They've got financial problems, relationship problems. And from all these different places, the stress levels are going up to the point where a lot of people aren't laughing much anymore. I hear it quite often in work environments. You know, and they think about, yeah, I used to be the one who always found sort of a light side of what was going on, and they say, I don't do that anymore. I can't remember when that changed, but I don't do that anymore. And so that's really my mission is to draw it to people's attention. Look, there's it's a powerful tool in helping you get through the day and increasing the quality of life as well as promoting physical health and wellness.
Do you help people learn to do this on their own, or do you do guided imagery or exercises?
After a keynote, if someone wants, I do a workshop, which is a hands-on skill development program, and it's, you know, we haven't talked about one of my books yet, but it's called Health, Healing, and the Amuse System, Humor as Survival Training, and then the last two-thirds of this book, after it talks about the research, you know, focuses on how to build, you know, basic foundation humor skills so that you can get yourself to the point where you can use humor as a coping tool. So for people who want to do it on their own, you know, there's a roadmap there for how to do that. And for people who want to do it in a group, actually I have suggestions in it for if it's a support group or any kind of group, guidelines for running a group session. So I think that's when it has more impact, as people talk to each other about what they're doing from week to week, and those people seem to make more progress. But it's a set of skills that anyone can develop, which I think is worth saying, because I have people tell me quite often, well, you're either born with a good sense of humor or you're not, and I wasn't. There's nothing I can do about that.
Is crying the opposite of humor?
It's certainly, I don't know if I would say it's the opposite, but it's certainly on the other end of the emotional continuum. I'm not quite sure what the opposite of humor would, you know, some might say tragedy is the opposite of humor, but...
Or anger, maybe?
I think any of those... anger, anxiety, depression, they're all incompatible emotional states. When most people, when even people who you would say have a great sense of humor, for most people, once they get immersed in their anger, caught up in their anger, or their anxiety, or their depression of the moment, their sense of humor is out the window. And so... in that sense, yes, they're the opposite. They're incompatible with each other. But an interesting thing happens. If you put on the front burner, and that's what my skill development program is designed to do, so spend a couple of weeks on each of these, there's only 7 or 8 steps, what happens is you start to develop some mental habits whether it's playing with language, poking fun at yourself, or finding a light side of everyday situations, you know, being in traffic or whatever. Once you do that on your good mood days, what happens is it starts to be a part of who you are, and you have access to the habit when you're angry, when you're depressed, and those are the people who really get the health and coping benefits, is when they can do that in the midst of a bad day.
When you go in and do this for a corporation, do you help people move out the anger and the crying and the guilt and the stress before you bring in humor, or do you just lay that on top for them?
Oh, I just lay it on top. They bring whatever they bring. Mm-hmm. Different people are bringing different things. I have a fun sort of a comedy routine I do, which relates to, I don't know if you know who the comedian George Carlin is, but
yes,
he used to have when he used to do stand-up comedy, he used to have this routine in which he talked about his stuff. So I have a way of visually demonstrating, the emotional stuff we carry around with this, and how humor helps let go. I mean, that notion of letting go is really important. One of the things that humor, especially with anger, frustration, upset, anger, there's plenty of evidence, plus your own personal experience, that usually there's nothing to laugh at when you're angry. But again, your listeners can think about this. Think of a time where you've really been upset at something and you're perfectly justified in being angry, but in spite of your anger, something got you started laughing. Then the question is, what did you notice about your anger after the laughter? And virtually everyone says something like it disappeared, or what's probably more accurate is it dissipated.
And you're bringing up a memory for me. Oh, I was about 10. My mother was really shaking us down, and we'd done something terrible. I have a brother and a sister, and I mean, she just lectured us for like an hour and started to walk off and then turn around and said, "And I don't mean a word I say." And we all got hysterical. And it was over. I don't think we ever did the thing again,
yeah.
But that was a good way to end it. So
there you
that's
go.
That's a very old tape for me. I hadn't remembered that in a long,
yeah.
long time. The corporations that bring you in, do they bring you in because they see a need? Is there a list of people who need your services, or is this for everybody?
It's generally everybody. The experience, the details are always different, but you can name any kind of company, any mid-sized to major company, probably also small as well, but and if you compare stress levels now to 10 years ago, people who are in the same kind of job working for the same company, virtually everyone says the ante has been up. They're doing more with less. It's tough to keep up with the latest information, and the pace of change is accelerating, and everybody's being pushed to the limit. And there's global competition for a lot of companies, and so you've got to find ways to get your employees to work harder, work faster, be more creative. And everybody feels this pressure. So I see it all the time. People who used to love their jobs don't enjoy their work anymore. They're sort of going through the motions, to get a check. And so a lot of companies are recognizing this, that they're, this stressed out employees don't work so effectively, so they're looking for ways of changing the quality of the work environment. And they're looking at various types of things, but some companies are also looking at the idea of humor and a playful sort of atmosphere in the workplace.
But just like they have exercise rooms to work off stress, they ought to have humor rooms.
Absolutely. And I know of a couple of companies who've had exactly that, a room that's full of fun stuff, comedy, videos and cartoons on the wall. You take a break, you go there, and you just have a couple of yucks, and you go back to work. Some of your listeners may be familiar with the fish philosophy. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, but it started in Seattle, and this is related to the issue of the importance of making work fun and what a lot of companies are doing. This is very common in the Southwest Airlines philosophy that, when you fly, it should be fun. But in Seattle, a little over a decade ago, there were these guys selling fish. I mean, it's not a fun job. It's messy. You got to get up early. You got to clean the fish. They smell. And they just decided they would start somehow making selling fish fun. And so the images some of your listeners have seen would be the guys working behind there, the fish, you know, throwing them at the customers, throwing them in the air, and then the customer trying to catch this big fish like the size of a salmon. And so they've gotten press attention all over the country. It's been on television quite a bit over the last, you know, 8-10 years. And there are now, you know, groups that travel around the country representing what's called the fish philosophy. And the essence of it is that you do have some control over the attitude you bring to your work and your whatever you're doing on a day-to-day basis, and making work fun. Different jobs are conducive to making work fun in different ways, but if you do things to make your own work fun, your day-to-day interactions with people fun, it changes everything in terms of your ability to get through sort of a monotonous or difficult or stressful, you know, work situation. So,
if people wanted to get in touch with you to have you be a speaker or do a workshop, how would they go about getting in touch? Do you have a website?
My website is laughterremedy.com, www.laughter. Just run the words laughter and remedy together, LAUGHTERREMEDY. And I'll give you a phone number, because sometimes people say they have a hard time finding my phone number there. It's 302-478-7500. It's in Delaware.
Do you want to repeat that for people?
302-478-7500.
Okay. We have three or four questions that have come in, but I have two really urgent questions I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
How much of this might be the placebo effect?
Well, let's see. So the question is, you know, well, what do we mean by a placebo effect? And how do you measure that in the case of something like humor? In the case of the immune system, well, we haven't talked about pain yet. The pain research, again, it's almost 40 studies now documenting a pain reduction. And the question is, and what these studies show, you know, is that whether you experimentally induce pain or if it's with clinical populations that have ongoing chronic pain they're dealing with, exposure to humor reduces pain. And so the question is, well, is it really humor or is it something else? And so what the pain studies have been very good at doing is like giving other types of videos analogous. Instead of a comedy video, it would be like a really repulsive video or a tragic video. Or a travel film. It's sort of, you know, just interesting but not very arousing. And there's some evidence that it doesn't actually have to be humor, that any video which is sort of gets the body actively aroused contributes to some pain reduction or change in the threshold at which you experience pain. So there's very little of that in the immune system data. People haven't gotten that. But, I mean, the classic concept of a placebo is that it's the expectation that you're ingesting a drug or getting a treatment, and it's just the expectation, even though nothing's been done at all, you know, that's occurring. I mean, that in its own right is support for this whole area of psychoneuroimmunology. It's the fact that you know, I mean, for example, in one placebo study, people were given neutral injections. And they were told that for this treatment, you know, roughly, you know, a third of people lose their hair. Well, and about that same percentage wound up losing their hair through a totally inert ingredient. That's the placebo effect. What would something analogous be for humor? And so we're not sure quite what that is, you know. That's why some people have given tragedy or comedy videos. But I guess the basic question, is it really the act of laughter or the mental experience? If you compare humor to no humor, well, then the no humor doesn't show up the effect. So I'm not sure how you might consider interpreting that. That's usually means to most people. There's something about humor that does that. And the real question is it the mental experience of humor or the act of laughter that's the key? And that's not very well sorted out.
Just feels good. You have other books. Can you talk a few minutes about that and where people can get your books?
Yeah, again, the best place, it turns out the main place to get them now is through me directly. So if you want to email me, it's haharemedy@dell.net. That's haharemedy at D-E-L for Delaware, .net. And that's the best, most quickest way. You'll have trouble getting them in bookstores. That's a long story. But and the other things that are available are... pair of books is on children's humor. If you're interested in the basic nature of developmental changes in young children's humor, I have one book which describes that. And then the developmental benefits of humor for children. And then there's a hands-on skill development book for elementary school age kids. It's designed to build their skill at playing with language at the point at which they are excited about riddles. So it obliges them to... There's a key part of the punchline missing and three clues given. They have to use the clues to generate their own punchline. And my reason for having that for kids is if there are all these benefits for adults, if I can earn a living, you know, talking about the importance of the benefits of humor, why not in your own children help build the skills while they'll have then a whole lifetime to use those skills? And the other things, you know, if someone looks at my website, laughterremedy.com, they'll see, if you click on products, they'll see what's available there.
My email just dropped, so I was trying to get it back up. I remember one of the questions that came up. Do you know why nitric oxide makes people laugh?
Actually, I don't. The so-called laughing gas. I don't know the explanation to that. It does work pretty consistently. I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for that.
Okay. I got the mail back up.
But
one
thing... Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, before I forget, you know, before our time runs out, one important thing that I do want to pass on, there's in terms of why it feels so good... There's three new studies using, I think probably most of your listeners are familiar with an MRI. A functional MRI sort of indicates what areas of the brain are active, you know, being engaged when you're involved in a particular activity. And it's no surprise that, you know, with this expensive equipment, humor, you know, has been one of the last things to be looked at. But there's three studies now that show that in the midst of humor, there's an old pleasure center, an old reward center of the brain. It's called the mesolimbic dopaminergic reward system. That's it's a mouthful, but key concept there is dopamine. And this is an area of the brain it's a known pleasure center of the brain. It's an area of the brain that lights up and is activated in response to cocaine, methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's activated in response to humor. And laughter, the combination. Of course, you can't laugh too much during this because you have to keep your brain still. But that's starting to shed light on why it feels so good, you know, to have a let-go belly laugh. You know, it's tying into a long-established, you know, pleasure and reward center in the brain.
Are your research articles on your website?
Yes, there's a... If there's a major button right up front, you know, which says humor and health, and so there's a lot of, you know, most of these issues are discussed there at the website.
You've been in New York Times and USA Today and Newsweek and all these studies. People are taking this laughing stuff pretty seriously. I didn't really mean to say it that way.
Yeah.
But
you're trying to tell me humor is no joke?
Yeah. It's becoming more and more known, but we just got an email and it's kind of sad. I love BBS Radio. It is so upbeat, but I have a serious question. Last week, Thursday, I got laid off due to financial cutbacks due to increased taxes from state and federal level on small business a lot more than we need to know here. I love my job, but understand why they had to lay me and three other people off to survive. Because I could no longer support my boyfriend, he left me on Saturday. How can I find laughter in that?
Well, and it's there, you may not be able to find something to laugh at in that particular thing. See, I think when there's, take an example of tragedy. There's if your spouse dies, and take this up the ante a little bit. I mean, should they find cancer in this? I mean, I think that you should acknowledge your genuine emotional reactions to that. And there's not necessarily any humor in this at the moment. But the question, from my point of view, is that, so you want to experience your anxiety, your depression, your anger, whatever your negative emotion is about this, you want to acknowledge the integrity of that. That's your real feeling. You don't want to deny that and just laugh to make it go away. But then the question is, you know, whether it's tomorrow, the day after, you face up to that. Once you get to the point where you accept the reality of this, is okay, this is the way it is, now what do I do? That's the point, I think, in which you start looking for humor. If not in the particular thing he did, you may not be able to find humor that, but start looking for humor elsewhere.
I think she's very lucky to get rid of somebody who's like that.
That could be. I mean, see, maybe this is the light side of it, and say, well, I was able to, this saved me, you know, it sounds like several thousand dollars. And if it's someone who is leaving you at the drop of a hat at the first moment you can no longer support him, this sounds like a blessing in disguise in a way.
Absolutely. Three more questions here. I want to see if I can pull some of them together. One of them, Sherry, I've often heard you say that laughter is a release factor when you give people their keynotes. Or whatever ails them, what's the color of laughter and what does that color represent? Well, the color of laughter is the note right between B and C. And when people laugh a lot, this frequency goes up. It's sort of the color of pink, a magenta of pink. And it's representative by frequency is adenosine triphosphate. That has to do with the body's immune system and getting rid of trash and that kind of thing. Okay, I'll post more about that on our site. Okay, there's two questions that came in that are sort of related. I'll read them both and then you can choose what you want to answer. We got about 3 minutes to do this. What is your opinion of the present healthcare system and what it offers in the way of self-healing? You joke about a managed care consultant in heaven. Your audience needs to hear that story. Okay, the other one is laughter an alternative medicine approach? If so, is it paid for by insurance? And since it really works, aren't you afraid that the FDA is going to come after you because laughing costs nothing?
Right. Well, I can tell you that, I mean, in terms of the respectability of humor and laughter as an alternative technique, there is, you know, every year there's more and more credibility given to it. And the reason the credibility is progressively increasing is because the data, you know, are there. There's strong data with the immune system, strong data with pain reduction, and the cardiac health data are that's new, that's coming along. Those are the three areas that are pretty well established. And so I would say no, you know, that your insurance is not going to pay for this at this point. But on the other hand, speaking for complementary techniques in general, there is more and more every year acceptance of the value at the pocketbook level. You know, the insurance companies are starting to see stress management techniques as legitimate techniques to reimburse. And so it's no surprise that laughter and humor are going to be among the end, but it's also true that more and more hospitals all around the world are building in opportunities for therapeutic laughter, because even if it's not financially supported, they recognize that it helps support some of the body's basic health and healing mechanisms.
Now, this woman that said she lost her job and all that, even if she doesn't feel it, would I think it would be a good idea for her to just go out and get a funny movie and just watch it to abate those feelings for a while, and then she comes back to her own life.
See, I have mixed feelings about that because, I mean, it's important for everyone to realize that you can use humor and laughter to hide behind personal conflicts, difficult emotions, and so that's not, I mean, you can do that. That's not necessarily a healthy, adaptive thing, because the thing, at some point, you've got to confront, you know, the thing that's causing you the emotional pain. So humor can be, and laughter can be maladaptive. It's good at distracting you. It's a good mental distractor. But when you're done with it, there's still the fact that, you know, this person has left you, if that's who we're talking about. And so you've got to come to grips with that in other ways. And once you accept it and you come to grips with it, humor is a powerful tool in helping you move on with the quality of your life.
We've got to go. Our time is up. I guess last words would be find what makes you laugh and live it.
Absolutely. And let's end with laughter.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, it was my pleasure. Have fun.